This is Akafe. Laura Marie and Jessica Marie proudly present A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, a podcast. Fair warning, everything the hosts say is explicit, full of spoilers and adult content, and shall not be used against them. They have opinions. Let's try not to drag anyone for expressing themselves and just have fun for an hour. We all deserve it.
This episode contains spoilers from the Josie and the Pussycats movie with mentions of Drive Me Crazy, Idiocracy, Burlesque, and Spice World. For full list, please see show notes. Everybody, and welcome to A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, your weekly deep dive into the fantasy literature and fandoms that we love. I'm Laura Marie.
And I'm Jessica Marie.
And today we are discussing the 2001 cult classic, Josie and the Pussycats. And Jessica Marie, let's start off with your history with this movie, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's very similar to when we were discussing Drive Me Crazy. I didn't see the movie, but I knew the soundtrack. This movie came out April 2001. And I just remember I would spend weekends just laying out, because that's what you do with your skin. You know, you're terrible when you're younger. Getting my tan on, listening to the soundtrack, singing my heart out as if they were writing these emotional songs about my life. But then I didn't see the movie maybe until I was a little bit older. It was definitely soundtrack first before the movie. What about you?
Oh, I was definitely, this is so funny, definitely went in totally blind, which makes rewatching it as an adult, like now, amazing. But especially like rewatching it in college was again another amazing experience. But first experience in the theater, all vibes, totally vibes. Saw the previews on TV, thought, why not, look cool? Girl rock band. Don't see that a lot. Let's give that a shot.
Style is still so fun.
Yeah. Still so fun. Here's the thing. Walked out of there kind of like meh.
Oh.
Kind of meh because, and this is so funny because I know we both looked at fun facts and like marketing of this, walked out of there kind of like meh because I did feel that it was making fun of like teenage girls a little bit, especially with the beginning. But now as an adult, I'm like, ha ha ha. Ha,
jokes
ha,
on
ha.
Me.
Jokes on me. Jokes on all of us. Like, ha, 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 ha. And reading the interviews, of course, with the directors and everything, they were also like, ha, 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 ha. This is ha, ha. And everyone else is like, critical reception. It was tomato, tomato. It was very bad.
Yeah, as all good cult classics are, and we'll definitely get into it with the fun facts at the end of the episode and just like the commentary that was there. But it was so intentionally done, everything in this movie.
Everything in this movie was so intentionally done. The details are fantastic. They're so funny. And I think it's fair to say that you and I love this movie. Very much, right? Like, very much. It's just like, we'll say that very, very much. This movie is very relevant then and now. Then it was ahead of its time. Now it is just like, hello, hello. It's been saying this the whole time. There's another movie like that called Idiocracy. Please watch Idiocracy.
Well, yeah, and you say, when we talk about movies aging well, I feel like this is one of them. Like, yes, it's very early aughts movie, but you watch it today, and I think we'll have links in our show notes. Also, there was an interview with Lisa Evans, who is the costume designer. She had an interview with Vogue recently, like within the last couple of years, because they were doing just like a 20th anniversary follow up. And she goes, I didn't realize even when, you know, when we were doing the costumes and watching the movie and creating this, that it would still hold so true today. And what would our podcast be without discussing fandoms and exploration, without kicking off if this follows the pattern and the fandoms of Teen Girls of du jour?
Teen girls can't like anything, right? Without it being manipulated, without it being, you know, part of some big thing. Does this follow the pattern? Yeah, du jour is the pattern. Du jour means friendship. Du jour means hygiene. Du jour means crash
family
positions. Du jour means seatbelts. This, I can't, it's so funny. This entire opening with du jour is the pattern. Why it even tries to start the pattern again later in the movie when the girls are like, don't you think this is weird? It's like all happened in a week. He like opens his phone. He's like, and then he closes it because he doesn't have to start the pattern over again. The pattern being find a band, make them super popular, blind them with success, put subliminal messages in their music and ride that as long as you can before they find out. When they find out, murder them and put them on VH1's Behind the Music, which it that used to slap. Like, Behind the Music used to slap.
I don't remember any of the ones that I saw, but I always remembered it being advertised. And it was because it was always like 9 o'clock at night. I think it was past my bedtime. I think we've gone over this on the podcast. All my content was very much censored growing up, but that didn't mean that there wasn't intrigued and you wanted to know about it. I mean, there should be, maybe there is on like Paramount streaming or something, like a whole back catalog, or maybe it's CBS, whatever it is, that has all the former documentaries of Behind the Music.
Yeah, pop-up video also used to slap.
Back when they made music videos.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, we're so music old. Videos are just through and through this movie. But let's talk about this opening. This opening, which follows the pattern. It's a complete parody of I Want It That Way, the Backstreet Boys, like airport opening. It's the whole thing, the screaming fans, the airport, the dancing, all of it. Hilarious. Puts me right in my place because it's like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, I you know what? And it's, you say like, teen girls can't find love anything, but it's also very much the driving force of the economy. And we're pre-taping this episode, so who knows when we'll have it go live. But it's kind of like the Stanley Cup situation going on right now everywhere.
Yeah, it's really something. And especially like all of these signs, like, I just want him to touch me. It's just like these teenage girls just like not
marry me.
Yeah, all of this stuff. It is so funny. Backdoor Lover went over my head.
Me too. When they first came out, do you remember when MTV, again, MTV was like really good at making fun of itself then, because they also had that satire, like fake boy band Together. And I still, I'm like, you can't, I cannot find, that streaming anywhere. And at first I was like, oh my God, it's Together in this one. And they did a mocking boy band for this one. I go, oh no, this is du jour. But then I was thinking Together would have done really well right here too.
Yeah, Together would have rocked this. But this is du jour, which is,
we're so sorry if you're way younger than us and not knowing what we're talking
sorry about.
This. But you can know that we're talking about Josie and the Pussycats, and that is very much still relevant.
But du jour, those four actors are in the band in the movie Can't Hardly Wait. So that's Breckin Meyers et al. Amazing. They're so funny. Seth Green, like, stop it. They're so funny. I love them so much. The dancing, the like,
Backdoor Lover.
Still, you look at those lyrics.
It's like all the
caressing
songs.
Caressing those white cheeks.
It's all the songs that like how the adult figures in our lives just let us keep singing the words coming out of our mouths and it going entirely over our heads.
Entirely over our heads. Another reason that I could never be an actor is this intro scene with du jour in the plane was all improv, right? They had specific beats they had to hit, but
I didn't know it was improv.
Was improv, and they just let him have it.
I love Seth Green.
They're just so funny.
They're so good together.
They're so funny. So all of this. the Target plane, all of the advertising. We'll talk about the advertising probably a little bit later. But here's the thing I want to mention that went over my head as a child and kind of went over my head until I saw this like recently. I think last year when we started talking about it. But Du Jour is going on their world tour, which is just like a couple stops in Riverdale. Right?
And the way Riverdale has been recreated through the CW could be a world tour.
I mean, because he says, like, we'll go to Riverdale, or we're going here and here and here in Riverdale. But it's like they're leaving on their world tour. I was like, what? What? Okay.
Throwback to when we were trying to watch the show Riverdale and editor Sam made us turn it off because he was such a closet Archie comics junkie.
Yes.
And that's how we found out. And he's like, none of this is accurate. None of it. And we were like, did you just like admit to us? We had this new thing. We had no idea. The editor Sam was like, you have to turn this off. None of this is accurate. None of this happened in the comics.
Yes. This is all very upsetting. Here's the thing. Editor Sam sat and watched this movie with me both times. He was sat and watched this movie both times. And I will tell you a scene that he had comments on.
Oh, I can't wait.
So what happens here to set the pattern? The Du Jour discovers that there are subliminal messages in their tracks, and they confront Wyatt. And Wyatt says, Chevy to the levee.
Which is like, what a way for that to be a code word.
I know. We'll get to that in fun facts. But then there is a plane crash and it is.
And they are reported missing.
Missing. They are missing.
They are missing. And as we know, if you've been following Hackafé, we are firm believers in the no head, not dead theory.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Which Tara Reid, Miss Melody, will tell us a little bit later. Just tell me about this opening. Get this excellent montage, right? Like, we love it.
We have this wonderful montage of Josie and the Pussycats filming their music video and their like lead song. Little do we know, this music video is happening in their head because they are having big dreams of being rock stars, and they are playing at Riverdale's bowling alley. They make $5. It is a paid gig, and therefore they have a huge audience because the audience can't leave. And this is their biggest gig yet. So in this moment, they collect their $5, they get into their rock band van, and the mean girls from high school roll up on them, make fun of them. And they're still staying pretty positive. At least Melody, who's played by Tara Reid, and Valerie, who's played by Rosario Dawson, are. And Rachel Lee Cook, who plays Josie, she's kind of like in her feels about it because it's like, it's hard. It sucks when you are trying to put effort into something and it just feels like you're getting shit on all the time. That could wear on a person. Toxic positivity is a thing. But at least she has a good group of friends who are like, look, we're all going to take turns when each other are down. It's our turn to help lift you up. Let's go back to our house. We're awesome with our CD towers. And Josie, not like other girls, McCoy, being a mechanic, fixing her crush's car all the time.
Oh, and that montage of her trying to be cool, like playing guitar.
Like, I'm trying to find who I am. Do I wear sunglasses? Do I have, like, accessories in my hair? Who am I outside of, like, this persona I want to create?
It's so funny because their ages aren't, like, really told to us. They're, like, outside of high school, though, right? Like, they're outside of high school. I'd say yeah. By, like, a margin.
Yeah, I think, like, they've graduated. They just haven't left Riverdale.
Yeah. So, like,
they haven't met Cheryl Blossom yet, we assume.
This whole, like, because it's funny, too, because it's, like, the suburban, like, life of Riverdale. There's, like, dead end, and it goes to Josie's trailer. It's just, it's very cute. It's very fun. Of course, we have Alan M. Hello, Alan M., whose truck cannot be driven uphill in the heat. What?
Okay. Meanwhile, panning out on that neighborhood view, there's flat snow terrain.
Alan M., what are you doing, my guy? Where are you?
He put sugar in his gasoline so he could talk to his crush.
Yeah, so he could talk to crush. You know, Josie, what do you do when you need to tell somebody something? Should you always tell them? You should always tell them. Well, this dude at work is really smelly guy. It's just very funny. It just kind of sets the tone very quickly for how their relationship is.
Did you ever see him in any other thing?
No, I have no idea who this person is.
Oh my gosh. I was like, oh my gosh, that's Nolan. And he's in this like incredible, I'd say dramedy, but it's not, this drama on ABC many moons ago called Revenge. And it's about this girl who found out who like, she's basically seeking revenge on every single person who was complicit in her father's death. She was like, I'm going after all of you and I'm creating an alternate persona. It's incredible.
That's Captain America's girl.
Yes.
Yeah. I knew. I'm down with the pop culture.
What's up, all you cool, you young kids?
What's up,
kids?
All you cool kids? What's up, all you cool kids? Too funny. Okay, something that I cannot get over. No, there's a lot of stuff that I can't get over, but something that I will never get over is the comfort that the MTV News. You know, with Serena Altschul, really with any anchor in their late 90s to mid 2000s, I guess. But the comfort that gives me, like Serena. So when Serena is in the background here and she starts telling us that du jour has gone missing while these girls are eating, splitting one packet of ramen, very sweet. Did you clock here? That Tara Reid is using enormous chopsticks.
Yeah, the second, because we both watched this twice before the set for this episode. I noticed it the second, the first time I was like,
why are they?
And then
so
I just kept watching. I just didn't know if it was my eyes. And the second time I was like, okay, that was intentional. They're also different chopsticks when they zoom out, when they zoom in. It was like one pair of chopsticks. And when they zoom out, they're giant.
Huge. They're not just like, they're like bigger than her arm that she's using. It is just so funny. But it is here that Serena, MTV News tells us that du jour has gone missing. They have disappeared. And this is where Melody, Tara Reid, who has been established up to this point as being a ditzy blonde who wears
with a like, big heart. Like it's not
a
like
big
she,
heart.
She,
yeah. Yeah. She's very sweet. Everyone loves her. She sees the goodness in things, like, you know, also a little naive.
Except for when it counts. Like, she's not naive for the key moments that if anybody's listening to her, she's very insightful. Or like, you as the audience member, you're like, oh, especially the second time around.
And that moment is here when she says, well, listen, Serena said that they are missing, that they're not dead. So let's organize a bake sale. And Josie and Val are like, oh, you know, it sucks. You know, they're gone. But at least they had a record deal, you know, and they need like motivation. Rah, you know, we need to make music. Meanwhile, Tara Reid is like, they're missing. They're not dead. And they just gloss over it.
Part of the pattern.
Everyone ignores
it. We're still part of the pattern. We're still in the first like 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. You know, it is very good. The part of the motivation of like, you know, we need to make music, whatever. And they start playing acoustic music in the like outside mall area where they get chased off and eventually get met by Wyatt. The ad placements, they're incredible. They're everywhere.
There's like, and they're all stuff that's really, I want to say some of them are relevant. Some of them don't exist anymore. And it ties into all the subliminal messaging and, you know, how trends are made and consumerism and capitalism and the economy and who are the entities that control that economy and drive the consumerism. And the whole movie is a commentary on that and that we like, what is it like? I mean, we are being controlled.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. And we're dictating what's being created.
Yes. And that is shown to us when Wyatt goes into the record store and he's like, I got this new du jour music. I want to see how it plays out. And what is it? It's, oh my God, like orange is the new pink.
So what are these? Red is the new pink. Pink is the new orange.
Yeah, I need Zima. I want to start drinking. I want Puma sweats. And then there's a free thinker there that's like, I plug my ears when this music is here. Wyatt's like, tell me more. And then he's kidnapped. And MTV.com is like blasted behind the van on the wall. Like the branding, the logos, fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. And again, as like a child, impressionable person, I was like a little weirded out by this. I was like, really? Because here's the other kind of part of this. I did grow up with the, Pink Floyd has the, the music, play it backwards, you hear the devil play, all that stuff. Those subliminal messages. So I grew up with like that kind of in one ear, and then seeing this, it was like, there's probably really something to this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, even like away from the music part of it, I remember I have a friend who would say like how much Hollywood and entertainment controls things, because I'll use the example. Chris Pratt is the example that he gave me. I'm not saying he's an implant. I don't know much about him. But in the context of you have Parks and Rec, Chris Pratt. And like the people who knew Parks and Rec, like loved him for that. But then when Hollywood wanted him to be hot, he was hot. And now he's like one of the many Chris, like lead Chris's. And that was a controlled narrative, and I understand that PR and marketing and everything that goes behind that. But knowing that background, and this is somebody who works in entertainment, when they said that, to know that that's very much applied to the music industry as well, assuming I don't work in music. But I also know that Lady Gaga on record has said music is worse than is worse than Hollywood. So, and then if you look up like Kesha's history with Sony, it's watching this as an adult, having my own background experiences, and then people who have openly come out and made comments since this movie was made, some of it doesn't seem so far off.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, ooh, okay. Especially, when that guy comes out, it's like, you can't play music here. I have things to sell. Orange things to sell. Get out of here. I'm going to call the cops. It's just like, yeah. But also, as soon as they were like set up outside of that store in the outside mall, my first thought was, you can't play there.
Well, didn't they say they can't play at the mall, but they could play on a certain section of the sidewalk. And I say this because I'm thinking of a certain building, a few buildings right on 6th, where that it'll say property line. So if you're within the property line, you have to be off of it. And I'm talking about specifically in New York. But if you are past the property line, that is a public sidewalk and they can sit there. So if they were past the property line, that is public space. But if they were directly in front of the store, they could not.
Good to know. Interesting. I did not come across where this was, like, I know it's Riverdale, and we think that Riverdale is Virginia.
I didn't even think, because you know what? They obviously have to get on a plane to get to New York, but I don't know why I had LA in my head. Like, because the way that the ads are, the stores are, and them driving in a town, and Wyatt holding up the blank CD thing with Josie, that's, I kind of got LA feeling, but then when the plane crashes in the beginning of the movie, it is very East Coasty.
Yeah.
No, that's not a word.
Yeah. I don't know. Don't tell me where Riverdale is. It doesn't matter that much. It's just
a Riverdale, New Jersey.
Things.
How about that?
Yeah, there you go. It's just one of those things. You know what it is? I'm reminded of Pretty Little Liars, which is supposed to be set in like Pennsylvania, and they just like hop, skip, and jump over to New York. It's like, I don't think so. Moving on, I have to comment on how badly I want Wyatt's phone, that little flip phone, because he gets off that phone. He's like, it's very cunty, right? He just, yeah. Like,
well, did you ever know people who had the flip phone, but they had the ones that just because you clipped, it doesn't mean that they hung up?
No.
Oh, yeah. I know somebody who it would flip and they never hung up. And then they started talking shit about somebody who was on the line. And because they didn't hang up and they just clipped the personal little thing.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable. No, this is, it's the most satisfying thing. Okay. Modern phones couldn't do it. And it makes me want that fucking flip.
Like the Motorola Razr. The pink one. Oh, I've always wanted that.
Or they have a flip phone now that the screen folds. And
Oh, nice.
I want that one. Okay. Moving on. Paradise by the Dashboard Light is very important to both of us, but in this movie, it was just like, oh, that's so fun. Also, Alan, who is playing Wyatt, does a fourth wall break. And I love these little fourth wall breaks that happen in this movie. It's just everything about this movie is just so clever.
How great is that? I think it was this afternoon that I realized, I was like, wait, this is another really great role Alan did in a music-centric movie.
Yes, yes.
Shout out Spice World.
Shout out Spice World. How? He's also in Burlesque. How?
Wait, who is he in Burlesque?
He's the guy. He's the guy taking the like cards and
the
things.
He has the top hat. Oh my God, it is.
Yeah. How do you keep a straight face when you say pussy hats? And then he's like, well, that makes sense. You're not wearing any hats. I'm sorry. I could never be an actor. How do you deliver that? It's just so good. I really love this contract scene, right? Where he's like, I want to offer you, Josie, and all, a contract at Mega Records. Don't read it. Don't listen to any of our music. Don't read it. And I love that her manager just like comes out of nowhere with his sister. It's just too funny. And the bathroom scene, I just, you know, girls.
Yeah. What did the manager's sister say to get him out? She's like, we're changing tampons but it was something that didn't make sense. I was like, you can't do that.
Do you have change for a tampon?
Or do you have change for a tampon? And I was like, no. And I was like, but he doesn't know that. Just girl things.
Just girl things. He's, you know, silly man. But this, Jess, is when Melody starts talking about all of her insightful things about Wyatt, the scooping of the coffee and the napkin, right?
Yeah.
And this is also when it's like, Alexandra, the sister, is like, why are you always there? Like, and that's addressed on the private plane where she's like, well, I'm in the comics. Like,
the fourth wall break there. Yeah.
What?
And she's like, nothing.
What? It's just too funny. It is clever little things that I did not realize as a child. Again, because I had no concept of like Riverdale or Archie or like anything of like why that was important when I saw this for the very, very first time. So like all of these little things I didn't care to appreciate until I was older, which makes every rewatch of this movie just so much more fun.
What did you remember from this movie before we decided to cover it?
What did I remember? I remembered how gorgeous Tara Reid looked. I remembered all of those, like the fashion, all of the fashion, the shoes, all of it. They're all in like stripper heels. Very high, very high platform stripper heels. I remembered that it was all essentially a music video with like plot put in with it.
Yeah.
And I remembered Carson Daly, and I remembered like my jaw being on the floor and being like, oh my God, it's Carson Daly, because MTV really was something back then.
Yeah. MTV was it. Like that was for how we grew up. I feel like that's what we talked about. That's where we watched our shows. That's where we got our content. That's how we got our music. And even then, like if you want to talk about music videos and VH1 and pop-up videos, they felt like what would be considered the adult contemporary station that like a lot of your parents' music was there. But MTV was like,
you could get in trouble if you got caught watching MTV.
Well, yeah, like, because they had freaking Skins on at like 11 p.m. Like they were showing softcore. I remember I was like,
11.
What am I...
No, it was 11 p.m., like 10 central, and I was central, and I was like, hey!
It was so early for you. I was the one with the towel at the door, like making sure the light wasn't going through so I could watch stuff like this.
Oh, so yeah, it was, I don't really know what the equivalent would really be nowadays of like what MTV was for us, but that is the shit that I remember. I also really remember, and I'm actually going to look it up right now just so that I can make the connection. No, I'm actually just going to ask you, Jess, what is the Destiny's Child beauty parlor song?
Bills, Bills, Bills?
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. When did that come out?
90s.
99. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. No, no, no. It was Bills, Bills, Bills.
It's Bills, Bills, Bills. Because they're. Yeah, you're right. 99. Yeah, because then they're
like, dun, 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 and then they would like turn around and the. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all in the thing. So this makeover at John Frieda gives me such Bills, Bills, Bills vibes because they are in the heat for the hair. They're like singing. They're having so much fun. It is enjoyable here that they're not like putting up a fight. I love it when makeovers are like fun and the character's not like, I don't want this. Meh.
No, this is like everything that you hear about. Like, we've wanted this. We've worked for this. This is so fun. And I, you know, I was trying to tell in the second part, like the second watch, that was this just like, I'm curious what the script said. Like, was like, just be fun, just be playful and sing the songs. Because when you cut to the end of this movie and they have all the bloopers, it made me wonder if like this scene was just like a fun part of the blooper reel, because the cast looked like they got along so well and it was just a fun place to be and hang out.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. And the chemistry between them too just seems like really genuine. So
yeah,
it doesn't seem like the cast kept in touch, but it is nice to have this as like a little time capsule.
But they all have fond memories. It's like when you have coworkers you really vibed with and you have no like ill intent after working with them. But like it was just like you said, a good time. And I feel like you don't hear about those that much. I mean, granted, it was, you know, they filmed this in the 90s because it came out in 2001. So like the social media aspect wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. But the billboards were there. And when they come out, I say they, when the Pussycats and Wyatt come out of John Frieda, they are just like, bam, with all of the billboards there in the city.
In the middle of Times Square. Well, yeah. I assumed it was Times Square.
Yeah, but no. They don't like name like, wow. They say the city.
Oh, well, they do. No, yeah. No, it is Times Square because it's one of the last shots that we have of the Twin Towers before 9/11.
Yep. So because they reference New York as the city, it makes me think that they are East, like, local, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, not like, it's just it different. It's like lingo. Like,
yeah.
It's just different.
Well, and there's, and like, if you think of context, like, John Frieda is in New York, and like the context and the trees, and like, I think the Riverdale part of it is a good indicator that you had brought up, because when that plane crashed, it wasn't like there were palm trees in the background. It wasn't this cross country thing. It was like far enough where you want to take a plane, but close enough that you can tell the environment is still the same.
It's just one of those things that like, it's just interesting. This is where Wyatt talks to Fiona. We have our small introduction to Fiona. We will talk about Fiona. Fiona is Parker Posey. I love Parker Posey.
You knew Parker Posey from prior to this movie.
Parker Posey from Dazed and Confused. Parker Posey from Best in Show. Parker Posey has been in my life for a very long time. I love her so much. She's also in Blade Trinity. Those are just like some things, some of her more mainstream things. She's amazing. She's so incredibly funny. And something that she does in this scene for her, the investors and the government, cracks me up every single time. And it is lights. I can't do it. I can't do it. Her timing, her gestures, her voice is perfection here. And I do feel that with Parker Posey coming to White Lotus, that it will be interesting to see what the reaction is to her, like a mainstream audience, because she's amazing and she's fantastic. And I'll fight people that say that she isn't. But here,
there are people who say she's not.
There are people there. Yes, there are. There are people that don't recognize her for her greatness. Right. Like she is an indie like queen, I would think. Right. I think is the term. And her mainstream stuff. Right.
Which is so interesting, because even though I haven't seen a lot of her projects, when the White Lotus announcement was made, I knew the name.
Yeah. So while Fiona, Miss Parker Posey Fiona, has these investors and the U.S. government, and she's like, hello, I'm going to take you into my lair. It's the lair drop is just a few seconds too long, and it's amazing. It's amazing. I love how long it is, because it's just slightly too long.
It's slightly too, like, uncomfortable to them, like the people, yeah. Like the diplomats, like, mats who are there.
It's so good. And what happens is Fiona opens up the command center, which is underneath the record company. And she's like, this is why the government is so interested in music, because this is what we do with music. We're basically we're the command center of trends. And I'm pointing this out because behind Fiona, while she's talking, is a bunch of like scrolling phrases and things. And one of them is that Can't Hardly Wait is an underrated movie. And that is very funny, because the directors of this movie are the directors of Can't Hardly Wait. And that is just too perfect. It is too perfect. This is also where Fiona says, like, behind the music is we created behind the music to explain what happens to artists that we kill when they find out about the subliminal messages. It happens more than you think. Let me tell you. Eugene, I was not expecting Eugene.
Yes. Which is also so funny, because again, this movie came out in 2001. It was filmed in the late 90s. And it was came out after American Pie. Where Eugene and Tara were both in.
It's just, saw him and went, ah.
You know, when we talk about, I can't remember which one it was. One of our 90s cult classics that we've covered, where we were like, it's such a specific group of people. Maybe it was 10 Things I Hate About You, that it was like the world just felt very small, like Hollywood, like who they went to. And it was just like the same people having a good time. And I mean, talk about connections. And I mean, look at the cameos that popped in. You have Eugene doing this. You have Carson doing this, like all these little pop-ins that you're like, oh, my gosh. And it's like everything's happening around the same time.
And Eugene being like, "And America's most ass-kicking country in the world." I just can't stop laughing. His voice is also very comforting too. It is nice to know that he has been like a part of my life for a very long time, and I didn't like realize or recognize it as a child. You know what I mean? Sirius Black, Gary Oldman, who's just been in everything, and I didn't realize it until I was an adult. It's one of those things. The Megasound 8000. This is how we do it, right?
This is how we input the subliminal messaging into the music. This is the device. And, you know, thanks to Eugene Levy, we know that subliminal messaging is good for the economy. And if it's good for the economy, it's good for the country. And everybody else is like, this makes absolute sense. The U.S. is a world leader, which I'm also interested. Not really. Like, that could have been a perfect video for them to put additional subliminal messages for the external governments to be in on this. But we know that the U.S. is one of the governments. They're like, ooh, this is like really smart. Like, we should totally be doing this. This makes sense. Why teens run the economy. And same thing that we've had the conversation for the last like year of Barbie in 2023. And honestly, always, but just nobody listens to us, that women run the economy. Hello. Thank you, Beyonce and Taylor Swift, for saving the cities and the country last year.
Yes. Yes, I want a Big Mac.
But you're a vegetarian.
Melody, you're a vegetarian. But I want to go to Foot Locker. What is it? Everything's chili jerkin. Everything's chili jerkin.
We want some jerkin.
It's so funny. But actually, not funny.
But not funny, yeah.
But also funny. I like Rachel Lee Cook's delivery there. She's like, oh my gosh, totally drinking. Ah, it's good.
After all of them have simultaneously said their own things, they stop playing the music and they also were starting to question, like, what words just came out of our mouth?
Yeah, especially when they're like, Melody, you're a vegetarian. Oh my God. Something that I absolutely love is during this like record montage, photo shoots, you know, recording things, the wind in the hair in the still ass studio when they're standing there about to record, the close ups on them, their hair is blowing in the wind. I just love it. It's a little detail that's just so funny.
Their lead single, and they're mm-hmm. washing the car inside and making their music video. This was so fun because you can feel that Virgin Megastore moment that yes. Empire Records was like always competing against.
Yes. And fun fact, this climbing of the charts practical set, amazing, amazing, amazing. Just they don't do shit like that anymore. Headline behind them as this like fame montage is playing, Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu to play Pussycats in movie. Just fun, just like funny little stuff. This fame montage ends in a hotel room where they're like screaming and like, ah, oh my God. This is the scene that editor Sam has a comment on. Not a bra to be seen.
No.
Not a bra to be seen. In this particular scene where the mean girls from high school come and they are the fans and they're like screaming and everyone's screaming. The Pussycats, they've never heard of a bra. And it's great. We love that. But it was, the nipple was a accessory.
I see what you're saying. Because, I mean, now, obviously, free the nip, all that. But in 2001, this was like very, like that would be considered, you know, like risque.
Yeah. So Sam sitting on the couch next to me was like, holy shit. Like, oh my God. How old were you when you saw, like, oh my God. And I was like, and then we had the conversation of what it was like to be a girl in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Wait, you haven't, like with all the stuff we've watched, you haven't had that conversation?
Not like
the actual, like it was just like in passing?
Well, I had Tara Reid on screen as an example to point to and be like, see, that's not like attainable for a lot of people. And that was the standard. And that sucked.
Well, even like, yeah, Tara Reid is a perfect example. And again, the costume designer, she said that they were going out to designers who were creating, you know, low rise jeans were very much the thing then. And they would have to in-house make them lower. So even like the low rise, like how low everything was, like even the low rise skirt, she was like everything needed to be lower, with like the waistlines had to be lower and the lengths had to be like shorter, with the exception of like the denim skirts. But even the denim skirts had the really, really high slits in this movie. But those rode very, very low.
Yes.
And imagine like low rise jeans riding even lower.
Yes. And so it was interesting to use Editor Sam as an example to see the like cultural kind of shift from that too. To be as nipple being an accessory in the late 90s, early 2000s, to you not seeing it anymore. And looking back, being like, whoa, the same can be seen, or the same can be said for when you go back and watch old episodes of The Hills and you look at Lauren and all of them before Heidi had her plastic surgery and what a big storyline that was.
The plastic surgery was a huge storyline.
It was a huge storyline because it was unheard of. It was unheard of. Nobody was doing that. And if you look at like Elsie and Adrina and
Whitney, who's the other one? And Kristen.
L something.
Low.
I liked Low. But all of those girls are really like super real. And there is a conversation between like them at that age and girls now at that age, and how our beauty standards have kind of warped what we see as normal. And that is a conversation. So the conversation of Sam just being like taken aback by like the nipple that was on display, especially during this scene where they're very bouncing, they're bouncing.
And there was like yeah, because I mean, that was very much at the forefront of us. And that wasn't even something that he would have considered.
Right. And I pointed out that old episodes of Friends, Rachel's just like yep. walking around.
Yep. Well, like, then in even like here now we're recording 2024, Kim Kardashian brought back like the built-in nipple bra. So you're wearing yeah. a bra, but you still want the impact of nipple exposure?
Well, and that is because time isn't real. Everything is a flat circle and fashion is forever. So everything comes back in style eventually.
Yeah. But and it's a way to for people like you were saying that certain like your body type, not everybody has the same body type or body structure. And you could kind of implement that structure, societal standard or what have you, of like the perkiness and the lift and this, that, the other thing. I mean, again, this is like a whole different spiral conversation. That this movie definitely brings out, because you're like, hey, boob jobs are expensive, but do you want to have your nipples looking high and tight? Like, use my bra. You can still feel supported and on alert.
Yeah, like there is something to be said. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There's a conversation there. I love that the girls are like, do you think it's weird? This is the scene that we were referencing to that kind of completes the pattern. Like, do you think that's weird that all of this happened? We went to number one in a week. Don't you think that's weird? And Wyatt's like, and they're like, no, of course we deserve this. And I do feel like, actually, part of me would be like, you know what? Fuck you. I do deserve this.
Yes.
I've been working really hard.
Yeah. Well, like, even when he says the line, when the mean girls come up to her and them and they're like, what's the point of being famous? And Wyatt says, what's the point of being famous if the people you hated in high school don't want to kiss your ass? And it goes both ways, because it's not just the people you hated in high school. You could have been indifferent towards someone. But if people hate you, I'm sorry. Yeah. I do want to rub in that I'm this type of person. And he goes, you know how lucky you are? Most people have to wait till their 10-year, reunion to kind of rub this into their face, which is also funny because flash forward to the ending, who he is and his high school history of being bullied, white-ass Willie.
White-ass Wally. White-ass Willie would be funnier.
I mean, but that would also, if that was what it was, that would also align with this movie too, just like the pussy hats.
It really would. Oh my God, the pussy hats. Okay, so there is a party in Josie's honor. They're forgetting Val, Wyatt, you changed the name.
He's already intentionally phasing Valerie out. And, I feel for Valerie. I feel like you feel like you're being phased out. You feel like, even though you're a part of the group and the group is still including you, but having like other people like not feeling included. And again, I'm going to put the link up from Vogue. The costume designer said, she was like, Josie and Melody were like already in the next phase of the trend in colors. You always have Valerie in the trend before. So like even in her costuming, it feels like she's always catching up and that she starts to conform with their style so she could still feel included, because emotionally she's not feeling included. And you get that with her internal dialogue. I mean, you have Wyatt not even giving her. And she's like, hello, group of three. Like, we are a group. We come as a package deal. And he's like, I guess another one can join us. That should have always been the given.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that is, of course, the invitation to the party. We have the introduction of the girls are going to do a stadium concert. It's Fiona's idea, right? Fiona's idea for the stadium concert. Everyone's going to wear our headphones. We have ours on our, we're wearing ours, our little cat
blingy
ears.
Cat ears.
Our blingy cat ears. Mr. Movie Phone does all the subliminal messages. That is a throwback that he doesn't do it anymore, right? Like, no, it's not a thing.
Wasn't Mr. Movie Phone like how people would get their movie times too? Like everything's
online.
No,
let's
not
talk about it anymore. Let's not talk about it anymore. No, no,
I
no.
I was like, I get my movie times online.
No, no. Shh. Let's not talk about it. No, we don't know who Mr. Movie Phone is. We've never heard of that.
We will redact this whole section.
So Fiona has like big messages, right? This is a big message that she wants to do. And we have now the first indication that Fiona is awkward because she starts mumbling things as she turns away from the government guy and he calls her on it. And she's like, what? Huh? No.
She has a couple good saves, though.
A couple, but it's like, stop talking when you turn your back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the first. I was like, how do people not learn? And I get like, that's part of the script or whatever. And you're like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. Oh my God. For real. Good little ad here is the feather dress, right? Because feathers are the new rhinestones. Isn't that what one of the phrases was when we were in the command center? Or feathers is the new sequence when everybody was going through everything? Yeah.
The feathers were supposed to be like Buffy meets Chicken Run or something.
Yes. Yes. And Fiona has a dress full of feathers and they make a little noise whenever she moves. And it's just incredible and amazing. And I love her. This party, while they're getting ready, Melody is washing in the shower with like a fry, like loofah.
Like a fry
it's
loofah.
So funny. It's so cute. But we have somebody break in her room and say like, beware the music. Very fun. Cameo by Babyface about like, you know, friends first. I wish I would have gotten that in writing. And Val, you know, Val's feeling very sad, as she should.
Babyface is in the movie? I knew he wasn't part of the soundtrack.
This is not Babyface. Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know what he looks like.
Oh.
I know the name. I know his music. I know that he like put this album together and like got people involved. I don't know what he looks like. I'm sorry to who this man is. He could be walking on the street. I want to know him.
Yeah, I swear it is. I swear it is. But now we're at the party. We're at the party and Fiona's dance number entrance.
Oh, to the jazz version of the Josie and the Pussycat song.
I mean, is there anything more iconic? No, it's Parker Posey doing, she's just doing the most. She's like, hi, I'm Fiona. Welcome to your party.
isn't it great? Let's go have girl time.
Oh, okay. And this whole thing, of course, Parker Posey does it absolutely perfectly as Fiona. But this is our indicator that like she is strange. She's a strange person.
It's a strange situation because they are in fight or flight mode because the second she gets, Fiona is behind like the divider. They're like, this is our chance to escape. We need to get out of here now. And then she comes back around and they're also still in survival mode because they're like, it is our life that I think it's probably serves us best if we stay here right now because she has a screw loose.
Yeah. And she starts asking, like, how much do you weigh? I'm 3 pounds lighter. Oh, but you look great. I'm such a pig.
Like, she's trying to have, like, these conversations of what she thinks girl talking, mm-hmm. you know, girl time would be.
Yeah. And it just doesn't hit. And everyone's really, like, weirded out by it. So would they leave? And Fiona's like, we got to get rid of Val and Melody. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. She tells that to Wyatt and they have like a little like laugh off. It's like, ha 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 ha. But then we have our aquarium date with Alan and Josie. Okay. I mean, it's cute. It's cute.
And of course, we have the Beluga product placement for Evian.
Yeah. I mean, really. My note says, real moment with whale tank fan. Come to my show. Some boy always asking you to come to his show. I'm just a girl from Riverdale. I'm not a rock star. Josie, stop. Yes, you are. No one has time for this self-doubt.
You can be two things. I think that's something that like...
Exactly.
You can be a girl from Riverdale and you can be a rock star.
Yes, you don't have to be one or the other. It's just something that I think a lot of writers don't really consider or don't like care about when they write these characters.
Maybe then. I feel like it's shifting more. Obviously, we see it shifting more now. Even recently with our Aurora Asher episode, that was something that she was saying, that it doesn't have, you know, you could, you know, we went from one extreme of the pendulum to another, and there is a balance that you can be all of these things too.
I also think there's a huge difference between movies and books.
Oh, of course. Well, funny you should say that, because at the end of this movie, they even say, you know what, we're shifting our subliminal messaging, that it's not going to be in music. We realize that it's more effective in media, in movies.
I remember being very excited that Val and Melody were going to go on TRL, and that Josie was like going to let them have their moment, right? I was very excited for them. And then when they get there and it's fake, I was so bummed. I was so bummed because I was like, oh my God, no, it's fake. Though that sucks. Like, I'm disappointed for them. And then Carson Daly shows up, and my childhood was like, woo, that's Carson Daly.
I mean, I feel like this goes without saying, you had a crush on Carson too, right? Did we all?
Yeah, I think we all did. And I love when Carson Daly is making fun of himself. He's like, the nails. Like, that was such a big deal when Carson started, like, painting his nails. Like,
yeah, and I forgot about the nails till watching this. Yeah. Like, he was so like, ahead of his time. He's so rocker.
His nails. Yeah. He was, like, real cool. He hung out with Kid Rock. I mean, but it was really fun to see someone as famous as Carson was show up in this movie, which was considered a flop, because he and Tara have a history, and that history you can read about, but the chemistry is on full display here.
Oh yeah, you know, when they were like, I'm Scorpio, I'm a Cancer,
I looked up
their dates because I didn't know if it was a line or if it was something that was written in. And I feel like there's been inconsistencies, as there would be, because tabloids are just tabloids, with our fun facts, that some people are saying that they met here on set but Laura and I were like, but didn't they meet on one of the like MTV spring breaks? Because prior to Tara's role in this, she had American Pie. So we're just like, we haven't done our thorough fact checking to see if there was like an American Pie cast thing on MTV spring break, but we're just trying to wonder where, you know, we're trying to be like the tabloids too. Like, where are the origin stories? But like, because in this movie, when it released in April 2001, they were together, but they had ended their engagement in June 2001. So like,
yeah,
we have a frame of when they were together, but that's about it.
Yeah. And the chemistry is like, it's just really, it's cute. It's really
an attractive couple.
Yeah, they really were. But I love Wyatt here. So while the girls are fighting Carson Daly very successfully on the fake TRL set.
And let me say that this is also another thing where like people are sleeping on Melody, because she's like, oh my God, we totally could have dated. And he goes, he's being a fanboy, like, crushing on Melody, like, you think? And she's like, no, you idiot. Like, she was so smart. She was like, I'm going to use this to my advantage. Again, Melody being slept, I like her.
Mm-hmm. I like her a lot. Also, while I'm thinking about it, in the very beginning, her hair has very obvious like circles in it to show that it's like knotted and like tangled. Uh-huh. And later, obviously, she has like very tight like waves. And
well, I feel like that's part of the makeover. Like, look, but I'm just like this like baddie drummer, and now she's like,
the
this,
circles
like
are absolutely like perfect. So like they sit in her. It's like someone placed little circles of hair. It's so cute and funny when you go back and look at it from before her makeover.
How funny and everything, like
detail.
All the little details that we've like all individually picked out. Did you ever go to TRL?
No, I never. just one of those things. It never happened. The fake set, though, I could do this fake set. You know, that's fine. I like the Matt Damon cutout. That's just very fun. It's a young Matt Damon.
Heath Ledger is the new Matt Damon.
Heath Ledger is the new Matt Damon. Oh, my goodness. Wyatt, while this is happening, Wyatt is like, yo, Josie, I'm questioning your commitment. I'm running a label here, sweetheart. It's the same line that Alexander gave her and all the Pussycats in the beginning. I got so much.
I have other clients. I know you're not it. Well, and it's also the thing that he said after the makeover where they were like, what? You haven't even heard our song. What if we're not good? And he goes, we'll just replace you. And they were like so terrified. But that is a very real, not just in this industry. I think we all have to remember that, like, in a way, I think, and it's one of those things that recruiters will remind you, like, we're all replaceable and we have to make, not necessarily make ourselves irreplaceable to wherever you work, but irreplaceable in the skill sets that you bring forth.
Yes. Because Wyatt's skill set is subliminal messages, and he gives that CD to Josie. And this is what sets off Josie's, like, I'm going to be a solo star. Like, you're trying to glob onto my fame. And that's what kicks off this fight. So Josie has this CD, and she's, like, having this go in her head. She starts off in the bath with it, and she misses Ellen M's show. But Val comes in and she's like, oh, my God, like Carson Daly tried to kill us. And she's talking to them, which I think is ridiculous, with the CD headphones and the CD player like still on and playing. She's like screaming at them, and she still has it's just funny. But Josie, subliminal messaging, fights with Val, you know, what you think I'm just backup? Oh, but you're good, solid backup. Like, oh, bitch.
And oh, they don't bitch. Know, like, they don't, they haven't put everything together again. But I feel like the one, like, because we understand that under that line, like, under the CD and under the subliminal messaging, like, we hear some of the things that are being said. But she has that, all Wyatt said was, hey, can you listen to this song? Like, it's a remix of, like, one of the things y'all are already listening to. Give me your feedback. I feel like one of the lines in the subliminal message was, when this song ends, you need to start it all over again. So it was constantly like on loop for her, because then she's walking downtown wherever, because the way she's, it feels like downtown LA at that point, but I know that they're still in New York. This is like me with the logistics. We talked about it previously. Is just like her walking and it's still playing on loop and she's just not sure what's happening.
Well, and she doesn't know what's happening, and she starts like seeing things, and like you can, she's like, there's like a little like glimmer where she's like hallucinating a little bit, and then she like falls and she breaks the CD, and she's like, oh my God, what's going on? And she sees the bus pass with all three of them, and it kind of like pulls her out of it.
Oh yeah, the bus pass pulls her out of it.
Yeah. And then she like runs back to the hotel, and Alexander and Alexandria are like eating all of her food like in bed. And they're like,
I heard all about your bitch fest.
Yeah. Like we know. And that is when she's like, oh my God, like, no, we need to figure out what's going on. You know, Diet Coke is the new Pepsi one.
Which sometimes it makes me feel like maybe they're, you know, sorry, thank you, FBI agents or whatever. But like maybe like the Coke Zero to, I remember when it was all Diet Coke. I mean, you have it in this and now it's all Coke Zero. Obviously, Coke Zero is the superior Coke. But like, I feel like it, when we were in college, you were lucky if you could find Coke Zero, and like you were, like people looked at you weird if you were having Coke Zero instead of Diet Coke. And now it's the other way around.
Yeah, I personally don't like Diet Coke. I said what I said. I don't like it. But here they discover these messages. And this is where Jesse's like, oh, my God, I'm a trend pimp. Like, I sold all of this, like, stuff to them. Heath Ledger is the new Matt Damon. And this is where Fiona discovers all of them. She's like, ha, 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 you thought. Bitch, more or less.
Yeah, and I made you. I created you. What if, and if you don't, and when, you know, when Josie's like, I'm not going to perform for you. I was like, I forgot. I think I was just thinking of my own experience. And I was like, your contract, your papers. Like, you cannot renege on this. You are signed. You cannot back out of this. And then she was like, you choose, like, you can perform. And you could save your friends, or you can kill your friends if you don't perform.
Yep. And I like the cut we have of Carson Daly, like in a sling with like black eyes and stuff, being like, I bought, you know, two of the cat ears, because the cat ears are the only way that you could listen to the concert, which is being like live streamed, which is like, it's being live streamed.
But I feel like that this is like such an indicator of this time, because now we're just like watching, you know, Renaissance and Eras Tour on our TikTok live feeds. But then this was like one of the only ways. It's like people who do pay-per-view for like UFC live fights. Like this was the only way you can see this concert, was like doing a pay-per-view version of Josie, but you had to get the headphones to do so. And the whole purpose of this like one night only concert was for Fiona to get her subliminal message in to the world.
Yes, to the world. And she threatens Josie with the car crash of Melody and Val. She's already got Serena Achill, you know, doing the MTV ad about
MTV is in on this. They are part of the consumer, the capitalism. They are in on this gig.
Yep. She says they died a slow, fiery death in a four-wheeled hell pit. It's just like, Serena, really? So they're, you know, Josie is threatened with that. And she's like, no, I will play, you know, oh, it's fine. And this is when Josie starts apologizing to everybody, right? She's like, you know, Val, this is also something. When Josie starts apologizing to Melody and Val, she calls Val her sister. She doesn't say that Melody's her sister.
No.
She does not. Did you clock that too?
I clocked that too. I was just like,
Okay. Okay. If I were Melody, I'd be like, and?
I'm sure there's some like sapphic fanfic about Josie and Valerie.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. There has to be. Oh, my goodness. Were you expecting? Of course. I think I know the answer. But when you saw this the first time, were you expecting the return of du jour?
No, but that's because I don't remember the return of du jour. But from a technicality standpoint, I was like, why are they? I watched it twice. I watched first for the vibes only because it had been so long, and the second to like look at the little intricacies and little details is the person who plays Les. He's the only one whose face we see and is talking and has lines, and everybody else is covered and doesn't have lines, or they have like mumblings and motions. And my brain is, the other three actors couldn't get out of production, so that's why. But it just meant like a production schedule. They weren't available, or they were like, look, I'm happy to do the cameo, but I'll only do it this one time.
Yeah. And it's so funny. And what happened was, of course, Tara Reid, Melody told us in the beginning, reminded us that they weren't dead. They were just missing. So they were able to land the plane just fine, but they landed it in the parking lot of a Metallica concert. They're a boy band. They got the shit kicked out of them. But Les knew the words to enter the Sandman. So he's the one that isn't as beat up. So we love that.
Which is also like, I mean, I understand like all the stereotypes that are going on with the genres involved with this movie. Mm-hmm. But if anybody has been to a Metallica concert, I have. Like, that's not how the fans are. So I was just like, again, I saw Metallica after seeing this movie. And then I've seen Metallica before rewatching this as an adult. So I was like, I mean, granted, I did bring a book to that concert, but they were still very nice.
Yeah. And again, Jess, you make a perfect point. This is satire, right? This is supposed to be satire. And like Starship Troopers, the satire kind of went over everybody's head or made everybody a little uncomfortable. And it just didn't really work at the time, but it works now. And that is why we re-watch. So what happens here is that Val and Wyatt start fighting, right? Melody starts fighting with the martial arts. And there's a girl fight between Josie and Fiona while du jour has like done a distraction, right? That's pretty much what's happening. And in the process of this, Fiona breaks the Megasound 8000, and we hear her message that was so important that go out for the concert. And this is where I think we can really start talking about the insecurity of girlhood, because Fiona, from here starts to admit like, I was bullied as a child. I have this lisp. Like, I had this nickname. You don't know how hard it is. Nobody liked me. I learned how to be this persona, but like, I want everyone to love me because I don't feel like that. There's a lot to unpack there.
Oh, there is so much. And I feel like it's still part of the conversation now. I mean, this whole movie, I think we've been talking about it throughout, but how applicable this is still now. I mean, obviously everybody, I think that's also another consistent thing on ACAFE is like, everybody needs therapy. Everybody needs to be like unpacking their shit because it's deeper. And like this, her being bullied was her origin story. And I understand that some people, you know, it can go one of both ways. You could either be the opposite of, you know, not wanting to be the bully. But, you know, understanding the background, I get it. Like, why wouldn't you want to feel loved? We talked about it again in our Drive Me Crazy episode where he's like, and what's wrong with wanting to be liked? That's all she wanted. And I mean, I think the bigger issue she should be concerned with is that told all these diplomats, these government diplomats, to invest in this. Like, that's what I would be concerned at. I was like, I'm going to go away for jail, which she does, because somebody needed to be the fall. But her showing her emotional vulnerability to unpack everything, just to be liked, just to have friends. Like, she wanted this, what she thought girlhood was supposed to be. That's why she had her, like, girls' room for girls' time, all to find out that, like, Wyatt had his own shit to unpack too, because a lot of everything who they were and who they created themselves to be stemmed from insecurity.
Yeah. And Wally is Wyatt. And while Fiona is revealed to be Lisa Snyder, lisping Lisa, she has, you know, fake teeth, all of this stuff. Wyatt is white as Wally. They went to the same high school. He is albino, I think, right?
He's albino and he has a wig.
Yes. And he put on an accent and they, you know, they take off all of their stuff. He lets out his like stomach pooch too and they embrace and it's like this whole beautiful moment. They both go to jail. Oh, this is where Alexander is like, oh my God. Oh my God. I get it. You can be happy just by who you are. Happiness is on the inside, not on the outside. He gets nude and he starts like running around. That's actually the message of the movie.
Yeah, that's the message. Because he's like, I don't even like this shirt. That was his thing. And I think it's like how consumerism can drive so many of us.
Yep. And then, of course, it says, you know, the government comes in and Josie's like, oh, my God, thank God. Like, the government is here to save us. And Fiona's like, what the fuck? And the government guy's like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, of course we're here.
Yes,
we are here to save you.
Yep. We know nothing about this. We were on to you the entire time.
Yep. This is where we have, you know, we're phasing away from subliminal messages and music. We're going into movies. Josie and the Pussycats is the best movie ever. Join the Army. It's just really good. It's very funny. It's very fast too. It's like, Join the Army. It's good. It's good. The concert. Jess, tell me about this final concert.
Final concert. We have a new song, hasn't been recorded, so there's no subliminal messages. And Josie's staying true to her Riverdale roots. Like, you can like it or not. Just, like, let the music speak for itself with no messaging at all. And everybody loves it. And then there's a confession of, like, friends to lovers, I guess. They both just, I mean, I don't know if you can really call it that. They both had a crush on each other the whole time. They're like, I love you. I love you. And Rosario's like, can we fucking play?
Yeah. Well, I was like, here's another man making this big moment for Josie and making it about himself. Like, okay, sir, you didn't have to do this right now, but
this
sure.
This is not
okay.
The time or place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rosario's fuck off the stage. Yeah.
That's why I like Rosario. Is like, and she doesn't even say anything. What I also like is she doesn't stay. She gives him the fucking look. She's like, excuse you. That's why Rosario might be like my favorite one in this movie.
She's so good. She's so good. They play something new. They win the crowd. Josie, I love you. Les and Alexandria have like a little thing. There's a montage of friends and then a dance credit. And that's the end of the movie. And it's wonderful. It's amazing. It's perfect. I love it. I want to say this before I forget. Editor Sam also asked me if it was accurate that everyone had like 2 inches of body glitter on at all times. And I said, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. And you get in the shower and it was just like,
If you found body wash with glitter in it and then put glitter on it, and it didn't matter, that it could be thin shimmer, it could be chunky glitter, and then you had the different glitter with a different confetti, so you had the star confetti in the gel body or like a body glitter roll. I love it.
Yep. So good. And I said, yes, that was absolutely accurate.
That is accurate.
Love this movie. Absolutely love this movie. Jess, I know you have fun facts.
Yeah. So some fun facts that I'll start off with is Rachel Lee Cook's singing voice was dubbed by the lead singer of the band Letters to Cleo, which if you've been following the podcast for a while, you might have heard us talk about them in our 10 Things I Hate About You episode. The movie was released in April 2001 with the New York skyline. This was one of the last films that came out with the Twin Towers in them. Beyonce was going to be casted in this movie. She was up for, I believe, Valerie's role. There are over 73 product placements, logos, actual items in like every single consumer market. It feels like entertainment, electronics, fashion, food, hygiene, cars. What I thought was interesting, I mean, just with my background in entertainment, as I was watching this, I was thinking about how much the partnership teams and the marketing teams were spending on all of this product placement, which is typically the case. Then when I was like doing all my little researchy notes, I found that all but one, Laura might know the one, all of the brands did it for free. They were totally in on it. They knew the background of the movie. They didn't need to be paid. They understood what satire was. I mean, you watch it and it's all there. Like, I started trying to keep a list to see if I can do it. And then after like my second rewatch, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy this movie. I'm sure there's a list everywhere. But I feel like if you're going to watch this, that would be a fun game to play. If there are what products that you see that and labels and brands and designers that you recognize, and then seeing if, and if you've never heard of them, it's because they don't exist anymore. Just like RIP Barney's, but I feel like Barney's was a really recent thing, even though it was probably within the last 5 years.
So my fun facts, I have a few. There are about 73 companies that have products in this movie. No, Jess, I cannot remember the one that said no, but I know that Target said, fuck yeah. So that was good.
Which is like so, it's like before Target was what it is now.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Really, really crazy stuff. Rachel Lee Cook's voice, obviously, Letters to Cleo, just as you said. Every one of the guys in Du Jour was in Can't Hardly Wait. Beyonce, Lisa Lefté Lopez, and Aaliyah all auditioned to play Val, and Maggie Gyllenhaal and Zooey Deschanel went out for Josie. They wanted Zooey Deschanel, but she was a nobody, and production said no.
Yeah, because this time, like, Rachel Lee Cook was at her height. I mean, She's All That had just came out like 2 years prior. But like, I guess, yes, filming wise, around the same time.
I have a very short list of some of the major brands that were featured. I'll do it very quickly. Target, Ivory Soap, Coke, Diesel, Ray-Ban, Apple, Ford, Krispy Kreme, Starbucks, TJ Maxx, Victoria's Secret, Sobe, McDonald's, Steve Madden, Puma, Bloomingdale's, Virgin Megastore, Kodak, Hostess, Motorola, Bugles, America Online, 7-Eleven, Frizz-Ees, Converse, Hawaiian Tropic, BB, Visa, Revlon, American Express, Evian, Butterfinger, Pringles, Barney's New York, Nixon, Red Bull, Verizon, Sony, Adidas, Sega, Ford, Advil, Crest, Clearasil, and Tidy Cat. And then Steve Madden and Puma supplied filmmakers with article of clothing. So very fun. I know, right? Let's see.
Those Steve Madden black platform shoes that I still would pay an arm and a leg for.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. For real. Jess, I know you're talking about marketing. My marketing thing is a quote. We were in this world, but we were only focused on the movie and this world and the jokes we were laughing at on set. And then they showed us the marketing materials and it was like, oh shit, they're going to sell this movie to 10-year-old girls. I don't know why we were thinking that based on the property we kind of forgot that's who we were going to sell it to, but that's when the panic set in. They're not going to sell it to the people who are going to understand this movie, and the people that are they are selling it to aren't going to get it. And that's what happened.
That is what happened. And like the people, even the people who were doing the reviews, it went over their heads. One of the quotes that I have, again, we'll put the notes in the links in the show notes. Josie was proving a point. Big companies are running the world, and even things that should be pure are tainted by the vicious and unrelenting hand of capitalism. Even people with the most wholesome of intentions end up being part of the very machine they've spent their life bumping up against. The Pussycats wanted to be rock stars, and instead they became trend pimps. No business starts off as the top dog, but once they get there, they want to stay there. This might actually be the most human thing about corporations, their desperate need for approval and popularity. Unfortunately, they don't seem to care whom they hurt or use in their pursuit. Capitalism is a high school mean girl who smiles at the teachers while she's stabbing you in the back.
Ooh, that's gorgeous. That is a gorgeous quote in summary. Oh my goodness. I have two more fun facts and then I am finished. One fun fact is that Rosario Dawson had to perm her hair and she hated it. Absolutely hated it. And the Take the Chevy to a Levee is a lyric from American Pie. The song focuses on the tragic plane crash, which took the lives of Buddy Holly, Richie, and J.P. Richardson.
Yeah, when I heard that was the code word, yeah, first right out of my mouth. First, yeah. Shocked.
Yeah. Woo, shocked, 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 shocked. Jess, my question for you to wrap up for me is, watching this as an adult, like, so as an adult, I say just like recently for this recording, how much did this impact you growing up? Like when you saw this, like how much has this like impacted you?
I feel like I didn't realize it impacted me until watching it now, specifically with the fashion and the style. Like when Tara Reid's wearing her bandana with her head, I had a bandana headband. Like I absolutely did. Like I either used the bandana or I had it like one with where I could have the headband and it was attached to the bandana. So I didn't have to worry about it slipping out. The shimmer, the makeup, it was really the fashion, I think. And this felt like the first girl rock group that made you feel edgy, even though it was fictional.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, I know you said you were just like vibes only, but.
Oh, well, I agree with you 100% on the style. This absolutely impacted my style. I wanted Tara Reid's hair and I was caked in body glitter in low rise jeans. Like this is just what it was.
I definitely had Rachel Lee Cook's hair. I had like the short flippy hair. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, Tara Reid and all of those like crochet tops and stuff. Like I definitely went through that phase. And it is so interesting to see that part of my childhood, like encapsulated, like it is here because this girl group, you know, the Donnas, Letters to Cleo, mm-hmm. like these were bands that were not mainstream when I was growing up, where I was growing up. So that was part of the reason why, like, I wanted to go see this because it was like a girl rock group. And that was like part of the whole thing, especially where I was growing up. So this impacted me in ways that I, like you said, did not understand until just kind of this rewatch too. Because when I turned this on, I knew every single song in this movie. My brain like rattled around for a little bit. And it was like, you know this. You know exactly what they're going to do. You know their emotions. You know every part of this. And I was like, how? Because I don't remember the dialogue. You know,
no, it's another one of those. The music lead, like, it, which is interesting because I did see a couple articles that they said like this kind of flopped more or less. It made 4.5 million at the box office. So like there was no ROI. I feel like the ROI is now because it's a cult classic and here we are talking about it. But that mute, like I just, you know, all the songs, like sometimes they'll still kind of pop in your head and you're like, where did that earworm come from out of nowhere? It's just one of those moments in time where you're like, was this, it's not a fever dream, but does it feel like it because we're the only ones talking about it? That being said, please feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're Acafe Podcast. We're also both on TikTok, Acafe Laura and Acafe Jessica. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.